Got to make it through the day.
That's right, by hating. All right, thanks for calling, sister.
Bye.
Have a good one.
That is, you're such a rock star. You file those papers like a rock star.
Stop.
That's so gross, though.
FMU, you're on the radio.
I got two top dicks in the world.
All right, who are they?
I think guys that sweat all the time, even when it's not even hot, or just sitting in their office sweating for no reason at all.
Andy sweats a lot.
We're not talking bad about him. Who else?
And most vegetarians, but especially ones that decide to become vegetarians when they're like 35 years old.
Because they saw the documentary about where the meat comes from.
Right, and they're really, really super against ever eating meat again, and they make such a point of it. And, you know, they're so bold on their views, as if they always had them. And you ask them, oh, when did you become a vegetarian? Oh, last month.
Like yesterday. Yeah. All right, mister, thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
You too.
Call us at 201-209-9368. Tonight's topic is Who's a Dick? FMU, you're on the radio.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm not too bad. So I think the biggest dicks are the people that greet you at Walmart.
Aw, why?
Yeah, because...
You messed up, mister. Call us, 201-209-9368. Tonight's topic is Who's the Dick? And if you've been trying to get through, you should call now, because I don't have any calls.
The cursing's going to give me a coronary.
Really?
It's so stressful.
Makes you so nervous.
It's so stressful.
It's okay. All right, should we go through my list?
Yes.
Jason with the people complaining about the economy on their Apple iPads?
No.
We liked that one.
I don't like it anymore. It didn't stand the test of time.
Who said, I don't own a TV.
Yes.
Did I do it right?
Pretty good. A little snottier, I think.
And Philip with the planking.
You
like
that one.
Of course, you're going to vote for yourself.
Well,
that one was pretty good, though.
The planking.
Can't make you the winner?
Yes, you can.
I don't know. Do I ever make
You'll
Andy
make
the
my
winner?
Day. You'll make my day.
What am I going to give you? You already have a shirt.
I want another one. I want a calendar.
That's more than just a weekly prize. Okay, we'll see.
Okay.
FMU, you're on the radio.
I think I know who the biggest kinds of dicks are.
Who?
They're the kind that would take your last beer when you're down to one and you're broke.
That is a dick move.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. All right, thanks for calling, mister.
Thanks.
Have a good one. Or like... Eating someone else's food is always a dick move.
Yeah, that's lame.
FMU, you're on the radio.
I think I know who the biggest dick is.
Who?
The guy who takes the last slice of pizza when everybody else has only had two.
Yeah, eating food in general.
I don't know if you really love pizza.
No, that doesn't make it okay.
It feels okay.
FMU, yeah, to you, you love pizza.
If you like it more than the other people, you deserve it more.
FMU, you're on the radio.
Hi, this is Becca Blue from Harrison, and I just wanted to say that it's the vegans who smoke cigarettes who drive me crazy.
Oh, good one.
You got it.
They're preaching about
good one.
Food, but they can blow smoke in my face.
Oh my! If I knew one of those human beings, I would punch them. I don't know any, thank God. What's your name again, Becca?
Becca Blue from Harrison, New Jersey.
Becca Blue, you're on the list, my friend.
Good one.
Have a good one. Listen at the end of the hour.
Will do.
Bye.
See, we got lots of girls to call.
Yeah.
I like that.
Me too. Girls never call. And they're not annoying.
No, they were cool tonight.
Yeah. FMU, you're on the radio.
Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
So, who do you think is a dick?
I think I know of a couple dicks. And, the biggest dick's probably Richard Nixon. And I know of a little dick, and that's Little Richard.
That's funny, mister. Thanks for calling. Have a good one. FMU, you're on the radio.
Hello?
Hi, who's the dick?
I'm going to tell you, there's two kinds of dicks. I'm going to tell you what they are. You ready?
No.
That guy made me nervous. How much time do we have on the official clock?
2.5 minutes.
Should we, did you get the song in there ready to go?
Of course. course I did.
Nice. Man, this is good. I don't have to tell you to do anything. I even saw you fixing the levels for every call.
I did.
Andy never does that ever. Just FYI. Hi, you're on the radio. Who's the dick?
Hey, you know when you're in traffic and there's a car in front of you and it's got a sticker on the back that says, in loving memory of so-and-so, and it has the year that they born and died?
Yeah.
Yeah, those people are really dicks.
They're dicks.
All they do is remind you of death.
Oh, Jesus. This isn't this a good is way dark. To end the show.
Oh, I'm so depressed.
I want to kill myself. Have a good one, mister.
Thanks, wet blanket.
Damn, you're mean. FMU, you're on the radio.
How you doing?
Hi, who's the dick?
Who's the dick? I got confused.
I'm hanging up on him. Yeah. How much time?
These people are killing me.
I think my vegan smoker is going to be my winner.
That was a good one.
All right, Becca Blue from New... Where was she from?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Becca Blue, you're the winner. Email me your mailing address and t-shirt size at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. I guess we should end it, or should we take one more call?
No, I don't think we should take another call.
All right, so this is it. You've been listening to Shut Up Weirdo. You can check out our website at shutupweirdo.com. And that's all. Is that it? Anything you'd like to say?
I'm going to say the...
The station ID.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, WFMU.org.
Beautiful. Nice work. Thank all you, right. Michelle, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
It was a dream come true.
Yay.
It is time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from howstuffworks.com. Tonight, Josh and Chuck explain sleepwalking, and then in part two, they separate mythology from reality when it comes to the escaped slave network known as the Underground Railroad. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant that makes this Stuff You Should Know. The late night edition.
It's late.
How's it going, Chuck?
Great. Awesome. Couldn't be better. How are you?
Same. Just the same. So, Chuck, I got a story for you.
Let's hear it.
Back in 1845... in a little town called Weymouth, Massachusetts. Although in Massachusetts, they probably pronounce it in some radically different way than it would be spelled.
Weymouth.
Weymouth. Or Worcester or something weird yeah. like that. There was a woman named Maria Ann Bickford, and she was a prostitute. And she was discovered on October 27th of that year, murdered, and brutally murdered, actually. And it was quickly traced back to a guy by the name of Albert Terrell.
Jack the Ripper?
No, but it was Ripper-esque. Her head was severed, or almost completely severed. Yeah, and it was with the knife. But the reason everybody knew it was Albert Terrell was because that was her boyfriend. And he had left his wife for her. He was a wealthy guy in Massachusetts, and he left his wife to be with Maria Ann Bickford. And he wanted her to quit the job, I guess you could call it.
I would say that too.
Well, she didn't. She liked having an income because she didn't have to depend on any man for whatever she wanted, and she refused.
Which is ironic though, because she was depending on men.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
her income.
That is very ironic, actually. Yeah. She ultimately died. Was murdered. And it was Albert Terrell who admitted to doing it, but he was sleepwalking, he said. It was a pretty thin case, but he was ultimately acquitted, even though he had set three fires in the brothel in an obvious attempt to cover up what he'd done while he was still supposedly sleepwalking. But the jury bought it, and one of the reasons they bought it was because it was a jury of wealthy white men who weren't about to put one of their own behind bars, as big of a crook as he was. But secondly, because in 1845, we didn't really understand sleepwalking. We didn't understand what people were capable of. We didn't understand how sleepwalking worked. And I know you sent me an article as recently as a month or so ago. A guy in Arizona was acquitted of sexual assault because he was sleepwalking, right?
Yeah, it was Illinois, but that was today. The news article is from today.
Wow, so even better. Even more recent, which makes my point even more thorough, which is we don't understand sleepwalking too terribly much more than we did in 1845 as far as explaining why it happens, right?
Right, absolutely.
But there are some really interesting aspects of this this sleep disorder, which is called a parasomnia, right?
Yes, that's one of many, but it's called somnambulism specifically, sleepwalking is. And
not to be confused with botulism.
No, not at all. And there's an official definition if you want to look in a mental health professional handbook called
the DSM-4.
Yes. You leave your bed while you're sleeping, and others find it difficult to wake you when you're sleepwalking. You can't remember what happened afterward. You're confused when you wake up. You aren't suffering from dementia or anything else physical.
That's a big one.
And it impairs your social life or work life or your life.
And that's for straight up sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Sleepwalking can be a symptom of things like dementia or Parkinson's or something like that. But that's kind of significant. And you should think that it's found in the DSM-4, which is the psychological Bible.
Right.
So it's considered a disorder of arousal, I think is what it's called, right?
Yes.
So, Chuck, while you're sleeping, when does this occur? When does it take place?
If you're an adult, or actually kids too, I think it occurs in the first third of your sleep, which is the non-REM sleep, which is when your body is, you're in your deepest state of sleep, but your body is kind of awake. So you're tossing and turning a lot, but your brain is shut down. So it's sort of the opposite of REM sleep.
Right, you've got non-REM and REM sleep, right? And usually sleepwalking occurs during the deepest part, which is what I think phase 3 or 4, or possibly 3 and 4, when, as Katie Lambert, who wrote this article, put it, with REM sleep, your brain's active, but your body's not. With non-REM sleep, which is when sleepwalking occurs, your brain is just dead to the world, but your body's still moving around.
Yes.
Which accounts for sleepwalking, right?
Perfect recap.
Thanks a lot.
And, you know, your brain is also resistant to arousal when you're asleep, so that explains why it's hard to wake somebody up when they're sleepwalking. But it's not dangerous necessarily.
No, and that's a question that we should probably just go ahead and answer. Should you wake a sleepwalker? You've heard warnings against that kind of thing, I think, on everything from the Brady Bunch to Hawaii 5-0, let's say.
Okay. Myth.
Yes.
You can wake a sleepwalker, but the rule I put in is wake a sleepwalker like you would want to be wakened just from bed. Don't go shaking them or anything. You wouldn't do that to somebody laying in bed asleep either. They'll probably have a heart attack. So be gentle and try and guide them back to the bed. If they wake up, that's fine. But it's not like a danger. They're not going to have a heart attack if they and die if they're awake from sleepwalking.
No, but you could arouse their startle response, and they are going to be confused and not know what's going on. That's, like you said, one of the symptoms of sleepwalking. But if you do manage to get the sleepwalker back to bed and they lie back down, that's it. You can pretty much rest assured that there's not going to be another incident like that, because most people sleepwalk only once per night, interestingly.
That's what they say. And 30 seconds to a half hour, I've heard it even longer than that. Yep. I guess it very much depends on what's going on, or maybe what you feel like you have to get done while you're walking around in your sleep. You're going to be sort of zombified, but you're not going to be walking around with your arms out in front of you like in the movies. That's a bunch of bunk. And you're probably going to be pretty clumsy. but you can still perform activities, which is kind of the weird thing about it. One of the weird things about it.
Right. You just perform them clumsily. Or you, oddly, I guess is another way to put it.
Yeah.
And sleepwalking is one of these, it's a hilarious disorder, really, because it's not generally that dangerous, or doesn't have to be that dangerous, although it can put you in dangerous situations. And people have been hurt in sleepwalking, but the idea of just, you know, interacting with somebody with a glassy-eyed look on their face who's clumsily playing the guitar.
Right.
That's a funny disorder. Yeah, it's funnier
I've
than cancer.
I've never had the chance.
I haven't either. I've never been much of a sleepwalker. I don't think I've ever sleepwalked.
Oh, I've sleepwalked, but I've never interacted with someone who was sleepwalking.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I've done it myself, though. It's good. It's a lot of fun.
But it's one of these conditions where we have all this evidence and all this data. We just haven't been able to fully put it together to figure it out once and for all, which makes for a better podcast for us, right? A little bit more data that we have on it, Chuck, is that sleepwalking tends to run in families. Children sleepwalk more than adults by far.
Yeah, you're 10 times more likely if your family, if you have a family member who has sleepwalked, to be a sleepwalker yourself.
So is it slept, walked, or sleepwalked?
I don't know.
Slept, walk?
Sure, that sounds good to me.
We'll just call it SW past tense.
It more often is found in kids, obviously. It's something you usually outgrow. More often identical twins, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, gene expression and all.
And I think they said adults, 2.5 to 4% of adults sleepwalk. And this is, they're almost always adults who sleepwalked as children.
Right.
And if you start sleepwalking for the first time as an adult, you might want to like get that checked out.
You definitely want to get that checked out because, again, it can be a symptom of another problem like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. Severe stress, I think, has been associated with it, not just in children, or not adults, but children too.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of like, if you have a child who's suffering from sleepwalking and it's stress-related, what are you doing to your poor kid to where the kid's suffering from such stress that he's running around at night?
Absolutely.
Know?
I wonder what I was stressed about.
I don't know, man.
I find it odd that you haven't asked me about sleepwalking yet, even though I've said three times that I've sleptwalked.
I'm trying to drum up the tension.
They used to think that it was like an epileptic thing or hysteria.
Well, it still is associated with epilepsy, actually. Hysteria is kind of out the window, though.
Yeah. They still think it's caused by epilepsy, though?
It's associated with it still, yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
We should change this article. And like you said, no one knows exactly why it's happening, but they can just say kind of what goes on when it does happen.
Right, right. We have all this information that hasn't been fully put together, which, again, I find fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Chuck, what are some of the, I guess, competing theories for why we sleepwalk?
Well, it's a lot of people think it's just like you're in a transition stage between being awake and being asleep. So if you've got a dead brain, well, not dead, if you've got a very sleepy brain and a very wired body, you could potentially get triggered. They think a lot of times, I saw this one study where they took 10 sleepwalkers and they kept them awake for more than 24 hours and then allowed them to sleep. And they found that a buzzer going off, 100%, all 10 people got up and sleptwalked when they heard this buzzer.
Weird.
After sleep deprivation. And before, during just regular sleep, 3 out of 10 were triggered by the buzzer. So they think that, like, any noise, like a dog barking outside, could, like, wake you up, wake your body up, mm-hmm. and send you doing whatever.
Good to know.
Yeah.
And sleep deprivation is a magic term as far as sleepwalking goes. They found that sleepwalking increases dramatically in studies when they're sleep deprived, when the person's sleep deprived first. And they recommend also that if your kid is sleepwalking, you should not only decrease their stress somehow, maybe let them give up the trumpet if they really hate it.
Right.
But also to get them on like a regular sleep schedule too, that could be part of it as well, that they may just be sleep deprived and stressed out.
Yeah, adults
poor
too.
Little kids.
For sure. Another theory with the kids is that there's all kinds of crazy hormones being shot about the body during the night, and that may disrupt the kid, and that would explain why it like tapers off after puberty.
Yes. Have you ever like done something, say driving or walking or doing anything where you realized you got somewhere and you hadn't been paying attention. You didn't really, it wasn't like you were blacked out or you were drunk or impaired or anything, but you were just distracted or doing something else.
Daydreaming, absolutely.
So I would imagine that that has a lot to do with how we could possibly sleepwalk. It's like maybe more basic part of our brain is activated.
Right.
Like the brainstem with that controls like breathing, walking, that kind of stuff, correct?
Right.
So maybe it's all brainstem.
Makes sense to me. People have actually killed people in their sleep, like you said, the first guy. There was someone else who, and it kind of depends on the case from what I've seen. Some of them get acquitted, some of them get convicted. One guy stabbed his wife 45 times and he was convicted. Another guy murdered his father and he was acquitted. So I guess it's sort of a crapshoot. There hasn't been any, you can't go to a law book and say, well, we have the sleepwalking defense.
Right.
Like the insanity plea.
No, but I think that you could probably find the same state witness or defense witness in the acquittals or convictions.
Yeah.
I'll bet there's some like great professional witness out there who like can convince any jury that actually if you're sleepwalking you can't possibly know what you're doing.
Right. Well, the guy from Illinois last week that was acquitted was I think they proved that he had a long history of sleepwalking, and this was some friend of his. He like went out drinking with her and slept, crashed on her couch, and then he said he woke up to some guy punching him in the face. She said, that guy was the guy I called because you were assaulting me in my sleep.
Right.
And he was like, I didn't mean it.
Right.
And they said, okay.
Yeah.
It took him like a couple of hours or something to decide.
Yeah.
The jury.
Yeah, that was really fast.
I thought so too.
That's what I'm saying. There has to have been somebody who convinced them and just laid it all out for him, because it's not like the average juror knows a lot about sleepwalking. It's all, you know, the cabinet of Dr. Calgary or,
right,
again, the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, who was that?
I don't remember. I just remember there was a sleepwalking episode, it seems like. I could be making it up.
You talked about injury, and I saw a study in England that 11% of people that responded, sleepwalkers, said they have been injured. And it's usually like bruising or cuts. But I think 11% of that 11% actually broke bones.
Wow.
Which is not a happy way to wake up, I wouldn't
think. No, it's not. Chuck, sleepwalking is not the only parasomnia. Remember we called it parasomnia?
Yeah.
It's a sleep disorder. There are other parasomnias. And the first that I think we should talk about is called somnambulistic sexual behavior.
Sleep
sex. Inexplicably abbreviated as SBS.
Yeah, that's weird. I wonder what the B stands for. I guess that's part of the ballistic.
Maybe that's the Spanish... the Spanish abbreviation.
Perhaps.
It's somnambulistic behavior sexual.
Yeah, so sleep sex or sexsomnia is, like Katie says in here, it's pretty much what you think. It's being asleep in the middle of the night and either, you know, masturbating or doing something to whoever is nearby.
Right.
Sexually.
Yes, and again, that can lead you to an assault conviction or you could wake up very happy, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess so.
And then, of course, there's the very, very famous sleep eating, which one generally associates these days with the sleep aid Ambien, right?
Yeah, eating all kinds of crazy things with Ambien.
Like cigarettes and raw meat. I think we've talked about it before, it seems like.
Yeah, we've talked about it. Kristen Conger wrote an article on it, and apparently the chemical Zolpidem in Ambien like crosses the eating and the sleeping wires in like 1 in 1,000 people. And they don't know why. But I also found another stat that said 1% of people have sleep eating disorders anyway. So I can't, you know.
Well, there's reports of people who have been on Ambien and then switched to another similar drug and have said that it all went away. Their sleep eating, abnormal sleep behavior. And then there was the first case of, well, the first documented case of a woman who was on Ambien who sleep emailed. And I can't stand the term the media gave it, but Z-mailing with three Z's.
That was awful.
Yeah.
It was completely awful. Yeah, that was pretty cool because she emailed, she fired up her computer in the middle of the night, logged in to the internet, onto the internet.
She had to use her password, too.
Use her password and sent several emails that apparently were a random mix of upper and lower cases and they were written in some strange language. Although when I read the first email, it didn't seem very strange to me at all.
No, it said, this is a quote, "Come tomorrow and sort this hellhole out. Dinner and drinks, 4 p.m. Bring wine and caviar only."
That seems like a very normal email to me.
Right.
I've sent that same, very same email before.
What about the second one?
Yeah, one said, "What the?"
Yeah.
...
I think, but it was the mix of all caps and lowercase that really just kind of, that had to be a little off-putting to see that. That looks like brain damage.
Yeah.
You know? It's like brain damage in text form.
She's probably seen a doctor by this point, I would say.
Yeah.
Although she was on Ambien, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that probably explains that.
Zolpidem, like you said.
And then also this week, very sadly, a guy fell. He basically walked off of his third-story hotel room in Majorca and just, like, broke a leg.
And hit his head, too.
And hit his head. And his girlfriend just, like, this. She woke up to find her boyfriend had gone out the window.
Yeah.
Awful. That's more than a bruise, my friend.
And if you like connecting podcasts, there was a guy in England, in Hartlepool, right?
Yeah.
And on Holy Island, at the Crown and Anchor on Holy Island, off the Northumberland coast, he woke up in quicksand. Actually,
yeah.
He drank too much, but then he sleepwalked. He SW past tensed into the marshland and found himself waking up in sinking in quicksand trapped in quicksand.
Crazy.
And the guy was smart enough to know that you stop struggling and lie flat.
I wonder if he was a fan.
Wouldn't that be something? It's possible, Chuck, because this just happened, right? It was August 11th.
Uh-huh.
I wonder. So Sleepwalker Stephen Rook, if you listen to this podcast, right, let us know if we saved your life.
Put the bottle down, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, well, he said he did. He said he spent the next day in bed, and he was avoiding alcohol for a long time and wants to thank everyone, a friend said.
Yeah, he'll be back on the sauce this weekend.
Totally.
I've said that before, too.
Yeah.
My uncle actually was a famous sleepwalker in my family. He, my uncle Steve, who you know as the guy who's helped us out before with some stuff, the guy we bought scotch for, AKA.
Oh, yeah.
He had a few incidences when he was young, and one time they found tracks in the snow leading from his house. So he said he went out to see if it was snowing. Another time he fell asleep on the couch after school, got up and ate dinner. And then later on, woke up and said, "Hey, what's for dinner tonight?" And they're like, "What? You just had scallops." And another
was
time,
was it scallops specifically?
That's what he said.
Well,
I asked him today. And then another time, he was going to the store with my grandfather, and he fell asleep in the car on the way to the store, and then woke up like in the shop that they were going to, like at the counter, paying for something.
Weird. What was he buying?
I think he said tickets to like a Danny Thomas benefit show or something. This is like the early 60s.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody was sleepwalking in that line.
Yeah, that's a hot ticket in Memphis, though, back in the day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to sleepwalk.
All right, let's hear it.
Well, a couple of times I'd gotten up and just gone out to we had a split level, so I'd go out to the banister overlooking our den and just start yelling things. And another time I specifically remember I remember after it, obviously. I got up and I got ready for school. And took a shower and got dressed. And then I woke up the next morning and I was like, that was weird. I must have dreamt that. And I saw like the wet towel and my clothes on the floor.
You looked down and you had your saddle shoes on. You're like, dun, dun, dun.
I was like clutching shampoo. So I don't sleepwalk anymore, though. I sleep talk, though.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
I do, too.
So does Emily. I think a lot of people sleep talk.
That's probably
no big deal.
Yeah.
What do you say in your sleep?
Yumi actually likes to use her iPhone to record me sleep talking.
Yeah.
And she loves to share it with everybody who will listen.
I've never heard
of it. Has actually emailed the sound clips to people before, but there's this one of me like just muttering and all of a sudden I go, Tootsie Roll Pop. And then that was it. I have no idea why.
Why am I not on that email? That's disappointing.
I don't know. I'm sure I could get it for you.
Yeah.
Lastly, Chuck, there's a point that I found fascinating, which is people have always thought and still probably think, because we're dumb, that you act out your dreams while you're sleepwalking. Not true.
Nah.
The point that Katie Lambert makes is your brain's not really active. It's in this low delta wave that you couldn't possibly be dreaming in. So you're not actually acting out your dreams. But there is a disorder called REM sleep disorder where you actually are acting out your dreams.
Right.
It's a sleepwalking that occurs in that phase of sleep, the REM phase,
right,
where your brain's active but your body's not supposed to be.
Right.
So you are really wound up if you have REM sleep disorder. You really need to give up the trumpet immediately.
Yeah, that's when you like wake up and you're dreaming that you're, you know, cutting wood for the fire and you're like chopping your wife's leg with your hand.
Right, exactly.
And she goes, "What are you doing?"
That's not what she's saying.
I say, "I'm cutting wood, babe."
You say, "I'm correcting you." All right, well, that's it for sleepwalking. I can virtually guarantee you guys will email us your sleepwalking story, so please do. If you want to learn more about sleepwalking and read a page that didn't make it into this podcast at all about sleepwalking in the arts.
Organically did not make it in.
I guess you could call it organic.
Well, we didn't say let's not include that.
Just go ahead and type in sleepwalking. That's one word. Or try SW past tense and see what happens into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I said I wasn't going to use handy anymore. Either way, we've arrived at listener mail.
That's right. Josh, I'm going to call this pot growing granny. And this is from KM.
I guess. Cryptic.
Yeah, it is. Hi guys. I literally just finished listening to your How Grow Houses Work, and I couldn't resist sending you this story. My grandmother has always been an avid gardener. She was very interested in pretty plants and had learned at some point that marijuana was a very beautiful plant. So she decided she wanted to grow some just for the sole purpose of seeing what it looked like firsthand.
Huh.
Now, where would a middle-aged woman in eastern Pennsylvania get seeds to grow pot? From my college-age mother, of course. My mom, though, was not a smoker by any means. So when she was asked to find pot seeds, she, of course, pawned the task off to her frat member boyfriend, who later would become my father.
Hmm.
My father was also not a smoker, but he had a frat brother that was known to partake in this particular lifestyle. And he has always only been known as Bob O in my family, which I think is pretty cryptic. So Bob O got him some seeds for the grandmother. She planted them, began growing pot in her yard, to the dismay of my grandfather, who was good friends with the chief of police and the mayor.
Wow.
The plants grew beautifully in the open air of my grandmother's garden. They live pretty close to the center of the city. And as far as I know, there was no attempt to obscure them from being seen. The plug was pulled, though, when my grandfather decided that come winter, the grandmother said, "We got to bring them inside this winter." And granddad says, "No, we're not bringing those inside." So they went to the compost pile.
Or that's what the kid was told.
And her glaucoma got much worse.
Right, yeah. Well, thanks for that. Who wrote that, KM?
KM.
Thank you, KM, for your cryptic email. We appreciate that one. If you have a story about your grandmother breaking the law, we want to hear it. Send it in an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode entitled How Sleepwalking Works, originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on August 24th, 2010. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for...
The National Weather Service has issued a flash flood warning for the following counties and areas: Putnam, Rockland, Westchester, Bergen, and Rockland County. The National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning in Bergen, Bronx, New York, Westchester, Hunterdon, Morris, Somerset, Bergen, Essex, Hudson, Passaic. This is serious. Essex, Kings, New York, Queens, Monmouth, and Middlesex.
Part 2, Josh and Chuck examine how the Underground Railroad worked. This episode was originally podcast on June 7th, 2011.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and with me as always is Charles W. Chuck Bryant, which makes this Stuff You Should Know the podcast, because Chuck and I are the hosts of that.
Hostesses?
No.
Hosts.
Yep.
Chuck? Yes.
How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm fine. It's you and I and Matt, our guest producer.
Yay, Maddie.
Alone in this entire building.
Yeah, it's the Friday before Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Friday afternoon even, and it's pretty empty in here.
Yes, it is. There's lots of echoes that we're going to have to adjust for in post.
Right.
Yeah. Do we do post anymore, or is this like basically just live to tape?
It's live to tape. At least we're not getting hateful stares as we walk through the office.
Yeah, it's refreshing. So, Chuck,
yes, Chuck,
as you know, I grew up in Ohio.
I was hoping you'd mention this.
Well, I grew up in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Your hopes are fulfilled.
Well, I know the reason why.
Well, it turns out I recently learned from this article on how the Underground Railroad worked. We talked about how this is going to be problematic.
Yeah.
That an estimated half of all Underground Railroad workers were from Ohio or lived in Ohio or part of Ohio. I had no
idea. How about that?
But reading that, it makes sense because that was such a part of my upbringing as a child. Everybody's house that was built in like the 19th or 18th century had like this is where they kept the freed slaves in the Underground
really?
Railroad. Everybody's house had like a little spot that supposedly was part of the Underground Railroad.
Just to have that heritage or
some,
for real?
Some were more believable than others.
Right.
But normally it was like a public building or like a National Historic Register building that like they gave tours to that was part of the Underground Railroad. But like everybody's house like had like a little spot in the basement where like, yes, conceivably
awesome.
Human beings could stand here and you know, hide out. But yeah.
Yeah, see, I grew up in Georgia, so that we didn't have those talks.
No, and apparently in this article, the author points out, and I don't know where she got this, but that there's still blemishes on families who were known to have helped slaves on the Underground Railroad in the South still today.
I totally did.
I don't know what she's talking about.
I thought that was completely out of left field.
It was.
I grew up in this state, and I've never heard anybody be like, yeah, that guy that lives down the street, their family used to hide slaves 200 years
Get 'em.
Ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not true.
So, but you were familiar with the Underground Railroad before this article.
I was, but it's a good time to point out that not nearly enough, because Black history is so glossed over in American schools.
Except in February,
and it's still even in February, that I went through all my schooling with just knowing, like, there was an Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman ran it.
And that's it.
Period. Never learned about Malcolm X. I think Dred Scott may have been mentioned briefly, but yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's changed some since then.
Well, for the listeners who had similar experiences, we're about to remedy that. Because we're going to tell you not only how it worked, we're going to tell you in so much detail that you could conceivably go start your own right now.
That's right.
And there are some still around today.
Yeah, yeah. Human trafficking.
Yes, human trafficking is the new word for slavery, basically. Mm-hmm. Where it's forced into sex work.
Yeah.
Right? And there are groups who are dedicated to like freeing sex workers from forced labor.
Yeah.
They're called Polaris,
mm-hmm.
which is a renaming of the North Star.
Ah.
Yeah. And others.
We should do a podcast on human trafficking. I think we have a good article on that.
Okay.
That Molly wrote, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, Chuck, basically the origins of the Underground Railroad, which was the network by which escaped slaves ran along to freedom,
mm-hmm.
almost always to Canada if they were going north.
As it turns out.
Probably started before the 1820s. But it couldn't have possibly been called the Underground Railroad until after the 1820s because the actual railroad system wasn't invented until then.
Either that or they were like way ahead of their time.
Right. But it may have had some sort of name, and we know that there were groups of people who were formed for the common purpose of aiding escaped slaves to go secure freedom, to get out of the South or get out of a slave state into protection in a non-slave state because George Washington complained about it in a letter in 1786 that he suspected some Quakers had helped some of his slaves escape.
He was probably right on the money, too.
Yeah, because Quakers were one of the earliest members of the Underground Railroad, and they were the most trusted because they were so recognizable and everybody knew, hey, Quakers will help you out.
Definitely the most trusted white people, for sure.
Right. But we should probably point out the reason everybody went to Canada was because there was a federal law in the U.S., right?
That's right.
What was it called?
It was called the Fugitive Slave Act of 1793, and it was around since 1793, but it really got its teeth in 1850 when it strengthened the fines and basically made helping a slave escape a federal crime, and then in non-slave states as well.
Yeah.
And pretty much meant if you were caught as a slave, you were going to be put to death and likely tortured in a public place. And maybe even your slave family or friends that you were with on the plantation were also punished, even though they didn't try to escape.
So anyone involved in this, and even not being involved, but being involved by a relationship or something like that, really had a lot to lose from this one person making it to freedom, which really it's just very heartening when you look back on what these people did. They risked a lot. In the 1850 stiffening of the Slave Act, right? If you armed a slave, which was routinely done because this was dangerous, then you were subject to execution, no matter who you were, white, black, whatever.
Right.
That was punishable by being executed. So people who were helping escape slaves were putting a lot on the line, right?
Yeah, and one of the myths, there's a few myths that even this article kind of perpetuates a bit, but more often than not, they were other black people or former slaves or current slaves helping the other slaves on the Underground Railroad. It was not a big happy group of white northern abolitionists risking their life to help out the slaves. They did that some, but it was usually Quakers or, you know, like I said before, slaves or former slaves.
Okay.
So that's one myth. And there's a few others.
Well, okay.
Which we'll get to.
Let's go through this. What did an escape look like, right? Along the Underground Railroad during its height in the mid 19th century.
What would happen was free black people would send a field agent, what they called a field agent. It was a lot of times a minister or a doctor posing as like a census taker.
Yeah. Somebody who could move throughout a community undetected.
Yeah. So unsuspected. They would make contact with a current slave who supposedly wanted to escape, and they had to gain their trust because this whole thing was about trust. You really had to trust because people would sell out their own kind to gain favor with the master sometimes.
Yeah.
So sometimes you couldn't even trust your fellow slave. So you really had to gain their trust as the field agent, and then they would eventually, once that trust was gained, arrange for the escape from the plantation to travel to the first safe house to a conductor. Actually, I'm sorry, they pass along to the conductor who would take you to your first station.
Yes.
And that was the beginning of the journey.
Right. And the station was basically somebody's house usually.
Yeah.
And the head of the household was the station master. And that was somebody who was putting his life and the life of his family's on the line.
Sure.
Feed and house and hide this person for a little while, possibly set him up with a disguise, which they got fairly
elaborate.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a story of one in a apparently what's a seminal work on the Underground Railroad, appropriately titled The Underground Railroad, written by Wilbur Siebert, right? And he talks about how a black woman was basically made up to look like a wealthy white woman, and to complete this disguise was given a white baby for her journey.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So people were, you know, fanatic about this.
Yeah.
I read another one, a couple from Savannah. The woman was the daughter of her slave owner, and her mother was a house servant, I believe.
Right.
So she was light-skinned.
Right.
So they had her pose as a frail, aging white man.
Really?
And her husband posed as like a loyal servant. Slave on their journey all the way from Savannah up to, I think, Philadelphia or Boston. But yeah, that was kind of harrowing. Apparently, they were almost found out a bunch of times.
Really?
Yeah. So I can imagine, like, just trying to escape through the woods is scary enough. Trying to escape disguised in plain sight has to just be nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially the lady with the white baby, because I imagine that whoever might have found her out would not have been too happy about that.
No.
At the time, at least.
Along the way, if you did maybe encounter a train conductor who found you out but was willing to keep his mouth shut for money, you needed money. Most slaves didn't have money because they were not paid.
Right.
And the this was, I guess at the station master might also hook you up with some money that came from what are called stockholders.
Right.
And stockholders were probably wealthy abolitionists who didn't really want to get their hands dirty, but were happy to support the cause financially.
True.
Right?
Yeah. And I didn't get, I mean, were they just people who supported the cause, basically?
Financially.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously in their hearts as well.
Sure.
Now I know what you mean, though. They didn't risk, you know, walking people through the woods.
No, and abolitionists, despite, you know, their desire to end slavery, were frequently accused, and rightfully so in a lot of cases, of, you know, saying, well, we think slavery is abominable, but you're freed and that's great, but go live over there. We still want to just have our very lily white parties and lives and all that.
Right.
And there were a lot of abolitionists like that. So I would imagine that just giving money to people to use for bribes or for travel or, you know, to support these station houses.
Right.
Probably really, you know, hit home. It's the same thing today.
Yeah.
Like, people don't go help, like, say, the homeless.
You're absolving your guilt.
They give money to, you know, organizations that actually deal with the homeless.
Right.
I think that this is very similar to that.
I think you're probably right. Runaways usually didn't travel alone, although, again, I read somewhere else on one of the websites that a lot of times they were alone. But when they weren't, they would have a conductor guide them to the next station,
mm-hmm.
usually about a day away. They didn't want to make it like, you know, a 3-day journey because it just, you know, you probably don't have tons of food and water and it's just more dangerous the further you're going.
Right. Not between station houses. The journey itself to freedom
could
last days, weeks, months.
Yeah. Each station was about a day away.
Right.
Ideally.
Right.
They would follow the North Star.
Yeah. That's a
big
one.
North.
That's why that one modern.
Polaris.
Yeah. That's why it's called that.
Full circle.
Yeah, thanks.
When the clouds were out, there's the old trick of looking where the moss grows, because on tree trunks, moss usually grows on the north side,
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to be headed north. There were instances where, because they made it a very zigzaggy route usually, you know, they didn't want to make it a straight line because it made them easier to track, but it also made it easier to get lost as a slave.
It did, and actually there's a sidebar toward the end of this talking about quilt patterns.
Right.
And there were codes embedded within.
That may be a myth.
I found a substantial amount of it.
Really? See, I found stuff saying that was like mythical, that in the songs.
Check out osblackhistory.com.
Uh-huh.
They have this list, this key of like what all of these different quilt patterns are and what they meant to slaves who came upon a quilt. And one of them was this kind of zigzagged X. It's called the Drunken Path. And basically it's saying, like, go in a zigzag pattern because there's guys out, there's slave hunters around. And if you, say, started walking south, they would be less likely to suspect that you were an escaped slave if you looked like you were purposefully walking south. Because
right.
What slave would walk south? That's where the south is.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, I mean, if it is made up, this guy did a good job of perpetuating it because it's very interesting.
Well, even in here it says it's one of the well-known legends or not. They just don't know, because a lot of this stuff, and it's good that you bring that up, a lot we don't know about because the Underground Railroad was secret.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know about a lot of the places. We don't know a lot of the routes or the people who worked there or who actually started it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Josh, also, I mentioned the moss on the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Clear nights were better to see the stars, but traveling in the rain was pretty good too, because a fat white plantation owner probably wanted to be inside by the fire. When it was raining and not chasing after his slaves.
So let's talk about the laws. We mentioned it kind of specifically earlier about some of the, I guess, the punishment that could befall anyone helping somebody, right?
Yeah.
And in 1793, the Fugitive Slave Act basically created the first laws that said an escaped slave can be gone and gotten. Legally, right? But there were slave states and there were non-slave states.
Right.
And the non-slave states said, well, yeah, you, that's a great law and you do whatever you want down in the South, but we're not really going to enforce it. And when we do, it's going to be very light.
Right.
Well, in 1850, this thing got a lot of teeth, like you were saying, and the fines were stepped up. The
yeah.
penalties were harsher. Execution was a lot more doable, I guess. And then it also became legal for slave hunters to walk into a free state, a non-slave state, and be like, hey, that black guy right there, I think he's an escaped slave. He should come with me.
Yeah.
To anybody. He could legally claim it without having to justify
Even if they were free men.
Yes. And apparently there were rumors of, like, slave traders, like, luring young black kids in free states onto boats and then, like, taking them off to the deep South. And it's like, what are you going to do?
Wow.
How are you going to find these people? There's no documentation like this. So basically the North came to really resent this change in the law in 1850 because people who were complacent living in non-slave states suddenly were kind of having slavery imposed upon them a little more.
Right.
And then the Dred Scott case, like you mentioned earlier, that really sealed the deal and really got abolitionists – I guess their roles expanded tremendously after that. And then as a result, also, the Underground Railroad became much more organized.
Yeah, that is Dred Scott v. Sanford. And it was famous because Dred Scott, a slave, sued for his freedom for himself and his wife and his two daughters. And on the grounds that they lived quite a bit of their lives in places like Wisconsin and Minnesota, in these outlying Northwest territories that, mm-hmm. Or Northern territories that had, where it was illegal. Slavery was actually illegal. So
right.
He sued on those grounds, and in one of probably the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of this country, they decided because the panel was full of Southerners, the panel, Supreme Court justices,
mm-hmm.
were a lot of Southerners, and they ruled that black people were not, or people of African descent were not citizens of the United States, free or not, they are not citizens, therefore they cannot sue for their freedom.
Right. They don't have any rights, so they can be basically captured and taken to
yes.
A life of slavery again.
But if it hadn't have been for the Dred Scott case, we may never have, well, we may have, but it really sped up the process of the 13th Amendment, the Emancipation Proclamation.
And hence the Civil War.
And hence the Civil War. And some of his descendants still live in St. Louis today.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, shout out to the Scots of St. Louis.
If they're listening.
Yes. And Chuck, we said that this precipitated the Civil War. The Underground Railroad helped move it along. The Dred Scott case. It basically, these things, Northerners actively subverting federal law and the South's economic clout really ticked the South off.
Yeah.
The South imposing its views on slavery on the North through this 1850 strengthening and the Dred Scott case, it really ticked off the North. So this division is very much part of what led up to the Civil War.
Yeah, Pennsylvania even thought about nullifying the Fugitive Slave Act.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like it so much, but then they decided, you know what, a better way to do this is probably to be subversive
mm-hmm.
and to support things like the Underground Railroad on the down low
yeah.
rather than cause some big political stink.
Write a check.
Exactly.
Right? So we say that because the Civil War is whenever you ask a kid, you know, why did the Civil War happen?
Slavery.
Oh, it was slavery. I mean, that's a big part of it, but that's why. It's not just slavery. It wasn't like the North was like, slavery's wrong and we're going to go to war with you over it. Or the South was like,
right.
we love slavery. We're not part of you any longer.
Right.
Although the latter I've heard recently was much closer to the point, that the South was perfectly happy with seceding, creating its own country, and basically creating an economic empire based on free labor that took over the entire Caribbean and the
really?
Southern U.S. Yeah.
I wish I was more of a Civil War buff.
I'm glad you're not, Chuck.
Really?
Yeah.
They're obnoxious, aren't they?
I wouldn't say obnoxious, but man, do they know a lot about the Civil War.
Yeah, and they like correcting people, too.
Yeah. And we're going to hear from them.
Yes.
So, Chuck, when you did finally make it out along this route up to the extreme northern states, the northern part of the extreme northern states, and to Canada, It could take days, weeks, months. It could take 24 hours if you happen to have the money and the gall to ride a train.
Yeah, or if you live in a border state.
Yeah, which apparently is why a lot of slaves never escaped from the Deep South.
Just longer to go.
It was longer to go, and they wouldn't have taken the Underground Railroad, which went exclusively north, I believe.
Right.
They would have gone to Florida or to Mexico.
Never knew that.
So Mexico in 1829 outlawed slavery and became active in protecting slaves who escaped to Mexico.
Yeah, Native American Indians, go figure, were very empathetic. Mm-hmm. They were probably like, join the club, my man. Come on in.
Almost literally, Chuck. So in Florida in 1693, Spain said, we're issuing a decree here that says any slave or Native American who leaves an English colony and makes it to Florida is a free Floridian, a free member of the Spanish crown.
Right.
Right. All we want from you is that you convert to a Catholic, convert to Catholicism, and become a member of the military for a prescribed amount of time. Right. And in return, you're a citizen here. Right.
Wow.
So that's why Florida attracted a bunch of people. And the reason they did it was specifically to attract people from the English territories like Georgia or South Carolina, because they wanted to jumpstart the economic engine, but they weren't going to do it on slavery, right?
I wonder what impact that has today. I wonder if there are more African-American Catholics in Florida proportionately because of that.
Well, one of the impacts that it had that's still around today are the Seminoles. The Seminoles were a recent tribe that started in about the 18th century,
right?
Based on displaced Creek Indians who made it to Florida to take Spain up on their offer and escaped slaves.
Really?
And now there's a division in the Seminole tribe between Black Seminoles and Red Seminoles. And they don't always get along. But during this time, the Seminole Indians came up because in a lot of cases, black slaves, freed slaves, or escaped slaves would come up to an Indian settlement, live near it, or be absorbed into it, and that's where the Seminoles came from.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't it?
There's really one jerk in this whole thing, and that's white
Southerners,
European dudes.
Yeah. Yeah, our ancestors, Chuck.
There were white Northerners, too. It's not all in the South.
White jerk white Northerners?
Sure.
Sure,
probably,
totally.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm just always stick up for the South.
Well, think about it. There were an estimated 2,000 to 3,000 Underground Railroad workers.
Yeah.
There were a lot more people in the U.S. in the North and the South than that at the time, buddy.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is interesting, though, to me that you said Canada, because that was where many of them ended up, and I never knew that. I never knew that, and it made sense, because why go to Pennsylvania, even though they're sympathetic to a certain degree, when the Fugitive Slave Act still is hanging over my head,
right?
And somebody could turn me in for some dough if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Let's just go to Canada, where they don't care and they don't have those laws.
Plus, I mean, it's not like you're going to just stop in Detroit. You're going to be like, oh, no, I'm going to keep moving to Canada.
Exactly.
So we were saying that there was some involvement by some people. There was separate involvement, disconnected involvement, whatever. But some of the people, some of these abolitionists and freed slaves and escaped slaves who'd made lives for themselves formed in these northern non-slave states and enclaves of where an escaped slave could feel very free, like Boston, Philadelphia, I think New York. They formed these things called vigilance committees, right?
Yeah, it's very nice. They provided like some protection for them, tried to get them work, tried to get them a place to live. And, so, you know, it's just sort of like, hey, now you're safe now, and we're going to help you set up life as an American.
Yeah.
And get something that everyone in this country should be born with, which is freedom.
Right. And here's a credit card to enslave you in a different way.
That came later. And that touched all races.
It did.
Yes.
So, Chuck, there's one person who kind of rose above all others as far as the Underground Railroad went, and her name was Harriet Tubman.
Yeah.
She is still referred to as the Moses of her people.
Yeah, it is not a cliche to bring up Harriet Tubman as, you know, like, of course you're going
to
bring up Harriet Tubman.
You kind
of
have
to. Of course we are, because she was the Moses of her people.
Yeah.
And she was an escaped slave from Maryland, and very sadly, I went back to get her family and help them escape, found her husband, had a new wife, and he was like yeah.
I'll
just stay here.
Yeah.
And she wasn't too happy with that, clearly. So she reportedly, books say, kind of hardened her a little bit.
Yeah.
Which in the end helped her because you sort of needed a bit of a hard heart to lead people on the Underground Railroad. You didn't need whiners and criers and people that would draw attention and make noise.
Yeah, apparently she would threaten to kill people if they didn't shut up.
Yeah, like, quiet down, I'm trying to get you to freedom,
yeah.
Just shut up about it.
Yeah.
Was her motto, officially, I think.
And she was individually probably the most successful conductor on the Underground Railroad, right?
Yeah, I think at least 70 slaves that she led to freedom to New York and Canada.
Personally.
13 journeys. And these are long trips.
Well, think about it also. She's an escaped slave. She goes back into slave states,
yeah,
13 times to guide people out.
She's a very tough woman.
She's a big bad mama.
She went on to serve as a spy, as a scout, and a nurse for the Union Army and received no military wartime pension for that, even though she was Harriet Tubman, and went on to sell fruits and vegetables door to door.
You're joking.
And wrote a book.
Okay.
And lived off profits from her book. She actually made money off of it, which is good.
The U.S. has a
checkered past.
Yeah. So, Chuck, you want to talk about how many people were let out? We mentioned Harriet Tubman let at least 70 out personally.
Mm-hmm.
And estimates vary wildly as to how many people escaped. As we said, the heyday of the Underground Railroad was 1820s to the 1860s, say?
Yeah.
Some people maintain about 100,000 people escaped, which is huge.
Yeah.
On the other end, the Journal of Black Studies estimates that between 1830 and 60, only about 2,000 people escaped via the Underground Railroad. The National Park Service settles somewhere in the middle and says, yeah, let's say 1,000 per year.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But again, it's very secretive.
Yeah.
People have no idea who was who, whether a house really was a stop.
Right.
There are some places that are most decidedly parts of the Underground Railroad that are still around today, like the Dobbin Horse Tavern in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah.
Has movable bookcase that people used to hide in. It was a house at the time. But because of the secrecy and because of the success of it, we have no idea, you know, who was a part of it, who wasn't. And that's pretty neat, I think. But there's the National Park Service has really spent a lot of time and effort and money so far figuring out, you know, where the Underground Railroad ran and who is a part of it and what
right.
buildings were and to preserve the buildings. And there's actually a bike trail
yeah.
that you can ride, I think 2,200 miles or something like that, along established, identified Underground Railroad routes.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
You know, I just wanted to point out when you said the our checkered history, America's checkered history. I still feel England stank on this.
Oh, yeah?
It was early enough to where it wasn't like, you know, rednecks from the South. These are still like English fops doing this stuff.
Mm.
So I blame England.
No? All right. You blame England.
I'm trying to figure out when my line is drawn and when I'm saying this was America. Because even after the Revolutionary War, it was still just people from England living here.
Okay.
So England is your fault.
Take that, England. And is Canada the big hero to you in this one?
Yeah, of course, man.
You know, that's still a territory of the English crown.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Chew on that one, pal.
I don't know what to think.
So, wait, before we go, we have to mention John Brown. We talked about how, like, a lot of people were like, here's some money. I'll be a stockholder in the Underground Railroad and impress my friends. John Brown walked the walk. He lived in, like, freed black colonies. If he didn't do it himself, he oversaw the murder of 5 unarmed pro-slavery settlers in Kansas, which was up for grabs between slavery and a non-slavery state.
Right.
And he basically turned into a guerrilla and staged raids on pro-slavery settlements and killed lots of people. And then he staged the raid on Harper's Ferry.
Yeah, yeah.
And was eventually caught and hanged for it. But he was, as far as the abolitionists go, he was like... He was, I guess you could say, equal to Harriet Tubman as far as in the abolitionist camp, where she was in the freed slaves camp.
Right, right.
She was hands-on and did it.
Did you hear the boxcar guy who packed himself up in a box and had himself shipped to Philadelphia?
No. Did it work?
Yeah.
Awesome.
He had, like, some biscuits and a little bit of water and some air holes, and I think his nickname is Boxcar. I can't remember his full name, but they, you know, opened up the crate in Philadelphia, and he climbed out, and they were like, congratulations.
You're a free man.
Holy cow.
So the bravery, I mean, not just the slaves themselves, people who helped. I mean, the bravery of these people at the time cannot be understated.
Agreed.
Because you were getting tortured and killed if you were caught. And all for your freedom. That's all you were looking for.
Pretty heavy stuff.
Yes.
So, Chuck, if they want to learn more about the Underground Railroad, they should type in Underground Railroad in the search bar at HowStuffWorks.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, brings up listener mail.
And, you know, I bet the ladies from Stuff You Missed in History class have probably done one on this already.
I believe so.
And so I would seek that out for another angle, because sometimes we double up and it's always good to hear different angles on these things.
Yeah.
And they're a great show, too.
And you can compare it word for word eventually by comparing the transcripts on the blogs, right?
They're like, they were a lot more factual than Chuck and Josh. All right, Josh, I'm going to call this critical email from Katie.
Mm-hmm.
We don't read a lot of criticisms much, but this was very specific, so I thought we would. Hi, Chuck and Josh. I'm a new listener, but have recently listened to about 60 of your shows. I am 31 years old and work as a film producer. You guys have really grown on me slowly. The concept of the show is the best part. I think there are a few things that are keeping you guys from really going big and would like to share my thoughts. First, I think the podcasts are a bit slow and have a few too many personal jokes. Every time Chuck has a personal story to go along with the topic, this is the least entertaining and interesting. Your personal relationships to the topic are mundane. Sorry, this should be cut. The banter is good, you are clearly smart and witty, and that is enough to keep the listener engaged. Josh, your intros are so boring. Why not mix it up and or cut the small talk? I fast forward past it every time. And I think your listener mail is the worst part of the podcast. I think you lose at least half, if not more, of your listeners at this part. Save that stuff for the blog. The podcasts themselves need to be solid and tight. The production value fails in comparison to This American Life or Planet Money for these reasons. I would highly suggest getting a new producer. Taking pot shots at Jerry. That's just so wrong. You need a makeover big time. You need new music in your intros and throughout the show, perhaps, sound effects and more out-of-studio commentary. Some of my favorite podcasts are Saunas, Hangovers, Cremation, Sherpas, Reincarnation, Mummies, and Altitude.
Basically, go be Radiolab.
I listened to your Guatemala pieces while I was traveling Guatemala last week. Pretty cool. In hopes of supplementing my education about the country while traveling there, but you failed miserably. Actually, she says it failed miserable. I get the point, though. They were my least favorite podcasts you guys have done, and I think you genuinely wasted your listeners' time with your personal pointless stories about your free vacation. I was shocked to learn how small your perspective of the world is, considering how often you both write and research about the world. Your impressions of Guatemala sounded like you've never left the South. They were naive and not worthy of 2 hours of my time. On the other hand, it was fantastic to listen how volcanoes work while climbing volcanoes in Antigua. This is what you guys are best at, and you need to stick to this, but it needs to be better. Seriously, you have mastered the podcast medium, but there is so much potential yet to be tapped. She says taped, but I guess she means tapped.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you guys continue to make great podcasts and that you really up the production value. Thank you, Katie M. P.S. I happen to own a house in Turkey and have spent much time in Turkish baths. You define them incorrectly in your sauna podcast.
Who is that, Katie?
Yes, Katie.
Katie M. Thank you, Katie.
For the tips.
We appreciate the insight, and thanks for listening.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode entitled How the Underground Railroad Worked, originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on June 7th, 2011. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at stuffpodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at HowStuffWorks.com, as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and WFMU.org. Take off your big stones, put on your soul. Got that soul sound going around.
Downtown Soulville Show, Mr. Fine Wine here with a whole bunch of great Soul 45s to play for you for the next hour or so. Got some weather things to announce first, though. Got a severe thunderstorm warning in effect till 8:31 p.m. for Nassau County, New York, Queens, New York. And we have a flash flood warning for Bergen, Hudson counties, New Jersey, Bronx, New York, Kings County, New York, Nassau County, New York, Manhattan, New York, Queens County, New York, Staten Island, New York, until 8:54. Pay attention to that. It's from the National Weather Service. Okay, lots of great Soul 45s for you tonight. Some odd stuff I've never played before. And some old favorites. 201-200-WFMU, the Soul Line. You can email me at finewine@wfmu.org. We'll kick things off in just a sec with some Bobby Blue Bland. Thank you.
place to stay. I've got money and I've got a place to stay. But everybody needs a friend, both night and day. Well, I walk, talk, but all by myself. Well, I walk, talk, but all by myself. I'm so proud.